You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
What is happening?
It's all I don't know.
You're listening to the AME Radio Show.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of the AME Radio Show, the show that is a voice of artists and entertainers everywhere. I'm your host, Jason Dowd. We got a great show for you guys today, and I'm really glad that you can join us, because I got some things I kind of want to talk about, and we're going to get to a couple of great guests that I think you're going to find fascinating, and hopefully that their story will inspire you to follow your dreams as well. It's very easy to do, and sometimes we can get distracted from that, and when we run into those walls, it's hard to overcome them. Well, these are people that we bring on here that are passionate about what they do. They have walked the walk. They've overcome those hurdles, and they're showing you that you can do it too. So it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't have to be an art. It just has to be a dream inside your head. You know, that little seed can blossom into something amazing, and that's what we're going to hear. That's what we're here to also promote as well. So before we get into anything, guys, please check out our website. It's www.theamemagazine.com. While you're there, you'll be able to see everything that is the AME Experience, which is our radio, television, and magazine. You'll also be able to get all of the links to our social media platforms. So on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, it's all there. You can also download the app that we have for free for our Apple and Android platforms, and you can sign up for our newsletter, too. So there's a lot of great ways to keep in contact with us and stay in the know. Okay, so the guests that we have coming up today are Jeff Lima. You know Jeff Lima from Chicago Fire. He's here to talk to us about all the things he has going on and, of course, his role on Chicago Fire. So we're going to get to see inside his brain and what makes him so passionate about doing what he loves to do the most. Then we have Jordan Jacinto coming on. He is a screenwriter and a director, and he just released a brand new short called The Dishwasher. And this actually has the potential of going to be a really large movie here, and he's kind of trying it out in the upcoming festivals, and I think you guys are going to be really interested to see what this is all about and how he got into being a screenwriter in the first place. You know, writing a movie is not easy, and I have a lot of respect for people that are able to do that. So we're going to be able to talk to these great guests and more in just a few minutes. Okay, now before we get into what I want to talk to you guys about today, I want to give you guys an announcement, because we were only going to have one show this week, which means it's going to air on Friday and Saturday. It's going to be a repeat. And the only reason why I'm repeating something is because actually I'm just really tired. This has been one long stretch of almost a month and a half where I have not had but one day off, and that was the start of that month and a half stretch. And I'm tired. So I just kind of want to relax this week. It's kind of a bittersweet week for me because it's my birthday. And I just want to spend time with my family, you know, and it shocked me because this past week I was at a funeral and I found out something about my wife and I did not realize, and I realized how out of touch I am with everybody. And that is going to stop right here, right now. And that's where I'm going to just take some time this week and just spend it with my family and my friends and learn a little bit about what's going on in their lives. And of course, I am going to be going to Disney. Now, this is not necessarily a celebration. It's just a day to get the heck away, because you need to do that once in a while. Okay, so what I want to talk to you guys about today is something that really grinds my gears. It bothers me every time I hear the word. And I don't know if that's because of the fact that deep down inside, I don't like to hear somebody being exalted over somebody else because of anything. You know, I believe that we're all equal. Doesn't matter what color skin you are, what religion you are, what profession you're in, what gender you are, or anything else. I believe that we are all even. We all wake up with the exact same playing field. Yes, we're all going to have different obstacles to get to the results that we want, but nevertheless, we all have the same playing field. It's how you let those obstacles get you down or stop you. The people that have overcome that sometimes, they are called VIP. But I've realized that along the way, the term VIP is simply a way to stroke somebody's ego. because we've made it somewhere, we feel that we are more important than somebody else. We're not more important than anybody else. Everybody else is equally important in the eyes of life. Now, there are ways that I believe that you can get certain accolades by going ahead and earning them. For instance, if you're nominated for an award, that's great. But I don't believe that anybody should have a special privilege based upon your status in life, whatever you do, whatever job you do, because you're telling me that your job's more important than mine and that your voice is more important than mine. That's not true. The only thing that is true in that is that our voices can inspire others to follow our footsteps and be a role model for other people. That doesn't make you a VIP. That doesn't make you a very important person. That just makes you a person that can set an example because you've walked the walk and talked the talk. But what I really don't like about the term VIP is that a lot of the times it's based upon the amount of money you can pay for those privileges. How many times have you joined up a, I don't know, let's just take a website, for instance. Like, let's just say you want to join up and be a part of this service. You have a $25 package, a $50 package, and a $100 package. Now, each one gives you different perks, but they always call the most expensive one the VIP. Why? Because to them, you are more important than anybody else on that list because you're paying more money for that service. Yeah, you're getting a few more perks out of it, but regardless, you're still paying more than somebody else is. That doesn't still make you a more important person. It just makes you more valuable to them because you're putting more money into their pockets. VIPs can be easily bought, but it also is sometimes giving out very easily because they want to stroke your ego. Because they know that if your ego gets stroked, you're going to spend more money. You're going to lavish over them, and therefore, they benefit. But behind the scenes, a lot of the times when people use the word VIP, they pick on you behind your back. And it's because they know that it's a ploy just to get you to spend more money or to get you to do whatever they want you to do. And you fall for it. That's why I don't go by the term VIP. I don't go by all these labels. You know, I just go by the message that I can give to you. And I don't ever want to outshine my work. I want my work to speak volumes. I don't want my name to say, oh, hey, look, guess who you are. No, I want my work to do that. I want you to admire my work. I want you to admire the message that I put together in my work. Whether it be this radio show, my own artwork, or whatever it may be, I tell stories. I help create a voice. I help create a platform. It doesn't make me important. It makes my voice important for you to listen to and take the advice and take the inspiration and the passion I'm giving to you and use it in your own lifetime. And however it may benefit you, that's what I want to see. I don't need special privileges. I don't need to be able to get behind someplace because I paid more money. I want that voice to stand out and impact my community. I want my work to change the lives or open up people's eyes to tell a story. That's what everybody's doing around here, really. You know, I do this because I love it. I don't make any money on my radio show. I do it out of a passion of love for you to inspire you to follow your dreams and to show people what you're doing. Because without it, you're just an island. That's what I'm passionate about. I don't ever want to be a VIP. All I want to do is be included with stuff and given the chance to get my message out there. Okay, guys. Let's go take a quick commercial break. What we're going to do is when we're going to come back, we're going to have Jeff Lima on the phone. He's going to be talking to us about his hit show, Chicago Fire. And a lot of other things he's got going on in his life. I think you guys are going to be surprised to see what he's got going on. And hopefully, by announcing what he has, you'll pick it up and watch it and follow it and find something new that you love as well. All right? So let's take this quick commercial break. We'll be right back after this.
I'm Gladdy, the dachshund, the face of Gladdy's Goodies. Are you worried about your pet's health? My parents were too, especially since I developed pancreatitis. They couldn't find any treats I could eat, so they made some. Our natural treats are healthy for all dogs, with and without health issues. We have lots of delicious flavors like chicken, turkey, salmon, sweet potato, beef, and more. With our homemade treats, you won't worry about the contents because they have no chemicals, fillers, or bad ingredients. Go to GladysGoodies.com now to get your fur friend a bag and pick them up some swag while you're there. You'll be glad you did. Remember, we have the treats and swag to make their tails wag. Again, that's GladysGoodies.com. Again, that's GladysGoodies.com.
Hey, everybody, this is John Schneider. I want you to listen to my new music, and I want you to watch my new movies. How do you do that? Simple. Go to the App Store and get the John Schneider app. By the way, you're listening to the AME radio show, and so am I.
Hi, this is Jamie Linner. You remember me from Melrose Place? I listen to AME radio show.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We have on the line with us our special guest. His name is Jeff Lima. He has been seen on CBS's Blue Bloods, the Get Down on Netflix, NBC's Taxi Brooklyn, and now he's in a new role here on NBC's Chicago Fire, and we're excited to talk to him about everything he's got going on and find out a little bit more about him. So welcome to the show, Jeff. How are you doing today?
Hey, Jason. What's up? I'm happy to be speaking with you.
Well, it's going to be a lot of fun for sure, and I love seeing how people are pursuing their dreams and living what they want to do and doing what they do for a living. So I guess the best way to start this off is to kind of find out a little bit about you and you know, give something back to your fans that, you know, they may not have known before. So I guess we'll start off with, how did you become an actor? When did you want to become an actor, and what made it so appealing for you to pursue it as a career?
You know, I don't know how much of this is true, but what my mom always tells me is, you know, since I could kind of form words, I've always told her that I wanted to be on the screen. And as a child, my favorite thing to do was role play, right? That was my favorite time in school, when I had an opportunity to dress up and, you know, be something else beside myself, mm-hmm. or outside of myself. But I didn't know what it really took in terms of education and training until I was about 11, 12, when I went to a performing art junior high school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for the first time, I was able to see what the training looked like and what it was like to put in hours and hours rehearsing for a production. And I guess that was my formal introduction to theater and acting as a professional, as something to pursue professionally. Right after junior high school, I was able to book a role in a film. That film just so happened to be nominated for an Oscar.
Wow.
So it was a pretty good first job. No complaints there. So I guess that was the start. It was just a junior high school that specialized in the theater arts. I auditioned, I got in, and it kind of took off from there.
Interesting. So you were, as a child, you were obviously interested in doing this stuff. Was there a show that you really wanted to be in when you were younger? You know, maybe just watching it, maybe you wanted to be a character on it?
You know, it's so funny. There was a show that I was enamored with, and it wasn't scripted. There was a show on a public broadcast called Zoom. And what sold Zoom for me was that the children who were on the show, similar to something like Sesame Street, the children on the show were animated, and I wanted to emulate that energy. And I was, you know, waiting for the day that I'd be given a platform to be that animated and to sell a story or to sell an idea as well as these kids were able to do.
You know, when I first, I kind of wanted to always be an actor myself, but I never really followed it through. But the shows that really were something for me, I always watched Double Dare, and I watched You Can't Do That on television when I was younger. and I loved the slime, you know, and I wanted to be slime so badly. And I just wanted to get on that show just once and just get covered in green slime and just say, I don't know, and then get slimed. And then the other one that I really wanted to do was be a part of the Mickey Mouse Club. And I didn't realize that it was this close to me. I mean, it was literally taped in Hollywood Studios here in Kissimmee, Florida. So it was only about an hour and a half drive away from me. When I realized it, I knew that's what I wanted to do, but my parents just didn't really want to drive. But, you know, I think that just squashed it right there, and I just kind of went on to other things. So it's nice that you're able to see something and pursue it, and you actually did it, and you're on some pretty cool stuff now.
Yeah, trying, and I understand how important it is for a child, you know, 10, 11, or 12, to have that opportunity afforded to them, right? Some of the work I do, and I hate to digress so early in our conversation, but while we're here, you know, some of the work I do outside of acting is advocating for children to have theater arts programs in urban communities, right? Mm-hmm. We have such tremendous budget cuts now, but we are still able to secure resources for children to have theater arts in their schools, even if it's just for 3 or 4 hours after school, right, from 2:20 p.m. to 6:20 p.m. But it's so important just so that children are not being deterred just because, you know, mom and dad don't want to drive me an hour away.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, you know, that is very important because, you know, for kids, not every kid is a sports person. You know, they can't get out there and necessarily play football or basketball. They just don't have that in them. But where they would survive and thrive and make a name for themselves in their school may be through the arts. And that's the way I was. So, I mean, without having the arts in the schools and stuff like that, that could be a real big problem for those kids.
Yeah.
You know, that's nice that you're doing something like that.
Yeah. You know, I've had teachers and I was in eighth grade, and the head of the drama department, she probably saw some, what do you call this? I hate to toot my own horn, but she probably saw some talent there, some promise there. Mm-hmm. And she took me under her wing. She ended up getting me my first headshots.
Okay.
And so that first project I booked, Half Nelson, the Oscar-nominated film, it was really on the count of her advocating and her getting me headshots. You know, I definitely understand how important it is to have an advocate in a school setting.
Yeah.
So that you're more inclined to pursue a dream of that pedigree, something like, you know, being an actor.
Right. That's awesome. That's really awesome that somebody would take the time to do something like that. And, you know, we don't see that a lot anymore with teachers. It's like, you know, they come in, they have to do what they do, and they leave. I mean, they see the potential with the kids, but they just don't have the resources, like you said, to be able to go out and do that anymore. And, you know, that one little headshot can change an entire career and you know, or a life in somebody, depending on what it is, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so being a teacher and having that that access to children, right, that's a big help. But outside of that, I've been fortunate enough just to meet people in an audition room who later on advocated for me. Gina Rodriguez, for instance, she was nominated for the 2015 Golden Globe for Best Actress in a series. She's Jane on Jane the Virgin. Mm-hmm. I remember meeting her at an audition, and I didn't know who she was initially. At the end of the audition, she introduced herself to me and gave me a business card. She said, here you go. These are the folks that repped me. Why don't you shoot over a resume and a headshot to the office for consideration? I went ahead and I did it. That was years ago. God almighty. Hate to age myself, but that was probably 10 years ago. And these folks are still the same folks that represent me today.
Wow.
Right? They've been able to, able to represent me. And I've booked shows like, you know, CBS's Blue Bloods, and I was series regular on HBO, Show Me a Hero, this, you know, Chicago Fire, Recur. It's all really because Gina saw something that she probably liked, and she was okay with advocating for me to her reps. You know, I'm forever indebted to Gina for that.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's awesome. Well, I guess we could kind of start working on your little bit of your career here, because you have quite a bit of it going on. And tell us, like, what was it like to actually book your first show? What went through your mind?
Oof. So, first show. I guess my first big show was Blue Bloods.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I'm not wrong about that. So that it was bittersweet in the beginning. I remember going for a smaller supporting role, and the casting directors, I don't know what the hell they were whispering to each other in the audition room, but they didn't want me for the role, and they invited me for to be seen the next day for a different role.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, in an audition room, when you hear, "Why didn't you come back tomorrow?" I don't know. I just didn't get good vibes. So, you know, I went in the next day. Long story short, the part or the role that they were considering me for was the guest star role, the character who kind of carried the episode.
Mm-hmm.
So when I learned that I had booked it, oh my God, it was such a big deal, right? It's one thing to have a guest star role. It's another thing for your character to carry the episode, right? The responsibility is much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
When your character is carrying the episode, it's your approach on set is completely different, right? Everyone's energy or everyone is feeding off of your energy. So you want to make sure that you're coming to work, you know, on top of being in character and just prepared like any actor would prepare. You have to come willing to collaborate and with a very high energy so that you're motivating everyone around you to put forth their best.
Wow. So now you're working on a show called Chicago Fire on NBC, which is it's a pretty big show. So, you know, that's pretty good. But, you know, there are probably people out there that have not seen it, you know, and I want to be able to have you tell them a little bit about the show, and maybe if they haven't seen it yet, spark their interest to go try it out. So what is the show all about?
Yeah, Chicago Fire, it's shot in Chicago. It takes place in Chicago. It chronicles the day-to-day of a fire station. And where we normally think that a firehouse is just inundated with explosions and all of this action, the show really captures those intimate moments or relationships in that firehouse. Right, we see a lot of camaraderie.
Mm-hmm.
We see our relationships in that firehouse, and we see these firemen exist outside of their title. For instance, Joe Minoso, who plays my older brother on the role, he's a great firefighter. He does his job well. What the series does is it delves into Joe Minoso a bit more, right? Mm-hmm. We see Joe navigate relationships. We see him, you know, eventually get married. We see his dealings with his family. I get to play Leon Cruz. And initially when we meet Leon Cruz, he's really trying his best to kind of reel Leon in because Leon is a loose cannon. And we see Joe build a relationship with Leon for the better, you mm-hmm. know, over the years, right from, I guess we started filming 2012. When we last see Leon is almost, you know, completely rehabilitated. He's a new kid. He's a new guy. He's an easy-spoken young man, you know, completely different from when we meet him or when we met him in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what Chicago Fire is.
That's cool. So what's been one of the most challenging things for you in your role, playing your character?
Yeah, because it's a recur role and not a series regular,
mm-hmm.
I'm in and out a lot, right? And there may be a time in which I'm not in for, you know, an episode. There may be times in which I'm not in for whole season. The hardest thing to do is to keep a through line of action. So for the actor, we want to make sure that the character is consistent. And if you have the series regular, the cast who are there every episode, it's easy for them to keep consistency because they kind of they live and breathe the character, right, mm-hmm. 5 days a week. Whereas for me, you know, how do I get back into character after not being on set for a month, right? So it just requires doing a little bit more homework on my end. I have to reexamine the episode that was probably shot a month ago,
mm-hmm.
and really ask myself what has Leon lived through from the last episode you shot to the very moment that you appear on camera. So it's cerebral work. It's a lot of mental work, so that anything I'm portraying physically cannot be or doesn't read contrived, but reads sincere and authentic, like we never skip the beat.
Mm. That does sound like a lot of work, but if you're able to do it, that's pretty impressive. So what are some of the things you like the most about your character, whether it be a personality trait, whether it be just maybe the ability and the role that your character has? What do you like the most about your character?
I like that Leon is very multifaceted. When we first meet Leon, we get this idea that he's just this very tough guy, and you know that's all there is to him. But over time, we learn that he has a heart of gold, and that he cares about how he makes other people feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so much so that he inconveniences himself to align his behavior with what makes people around him happy. And we would not get that from initially seeing Leon. You know, Leon is, you know, very urban, very direct. He can be very mean. He has a history of just having a mean streak.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, beyond all of those layers, he's such a human, and he's, in fact, I'd even go as far as saying he's soft, and Leon is okay with being soft. It took a lot of work on the end of his brother Joe, but you know, we finally get to see that Leon is this very human character, and that he is caring,
mm-hmm.
That he can be soft if he wants to be soft. And I really love that. He definitely has character.
You know, the one thing I have learned from people that have been in the acting business is that no matter what character you play, good, bad, hated, loved, or whatever it may be, there's always got to be a little piece of you inside of that character that kind of is, you know, it could be like a recognizable trait. You got to put yourself inside that character somehow. So, what are some of the things that your character has that kind of almost mimics you in real life, if anything, if you have put something like that in?
Yeah, I really love the way Leon dresses. Leon has this very very clean appearance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he has had a grungy lifestyle, but you know, he always had a very great haircut and, you know, very iron clothing, right? So exterior-wise, I appreciated that about Leon. And I definitely, you know, Jeff Lima, I am very much like that. But I also like that Leon is very, he adapts well. You know, when Leon was running the streets, he did it very well. But over the years, as Leon became a more responsible young man, he did that very well. And I'd say, you know, Jeff Lima, the person, I adapt well. It's one of my favorite traits to have, and I'm glad that I'm able to portray a character that adapts to very distinct situations.
So with Chicago Fire coming out and stuff, do you have anything else that you're currently working on other than Chicago Fire that you're able to talk about?
Yeah, I'm stepping outside of myself as an actor, and I'm putting some focus toward executive producing.
Wow.
You know, in my circle, there are great writers and great directors who are in very reputable film schools, and their biggest hurdle is how do I get financing for this project?
Mm-hmm.
So I've been fortunate enough to be in a place where I can step in and serve that purpose. And so over the next couple of months, we'll definitely be producing a short film or two alongside graduates or students in grad school in a film and television program.
Oh, wow. That's
that would be exciting.
That is exciting. I mean, it's not easy to find funding, and I've known that because it doesn't matter really where you go or what you're doing. Funding for anything is very tough, so that's definitely a gift to be able to have that and to be able to go out there and help people obtain that and create a dream.
Yeah, definitely, and we just want to make sure that we're approaching this in a way that allows everyone to be considered equally.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just a matter of getting a fair process in place, and that's where we are now. It's just getting a fair process in place so that we can, solicit all of the boring stuff, books and such, so that we can go ahead, hit the ground running and get these one or two short films made.
Sure. Well, Jeff, we're running out of time, so please tell everybody where they can find you, see more of your stuff through social media, websites, where they can see Chicago Fire and anything else you want to throw out there.
Chicago Fire airs Wednesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern. But my Instagram handle is TheJeffLima, and my IMDb page just Jeff Lima. And all of the series and all of my work, they'll be listed there.
Well, Jeff, thank you for coming on. This has been so much fun. I wish you all the best, and congratulations on these bigger roles that you're landing in these big shows, and I can't wait to see what you got coming out in the future.
Jason, it was a real pleasure speaking with you.
You're welcome. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back after this, so don't go anywhere, and enjoy yourselves. We'll be right back.
Do you love horror? The strange and unusual, fantasy creatures, or urban legends? Do you want to step inside a dream or nightmare? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you should check out internationally exhibiting artist Jason Dowd and his award-winning photographic collections by visiting www.imaginationartstudios.com. Get inside his mind and experience his inner weird.
Hi, I'm Paulina Lagudi. I'm the creator of Mail Order Monster, releasing November 6th on demand.
Hey, everybody. This is Jay Underwood from the original Fantastic Four, Roger Corman's early 90s production, and now the documentary Doomed, and you are listening to the AME Radio Show.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We have a line with us. Our special guest, his name is Jordan Jacinto. He debuted as a director with Laguna Sleep, and now he wrote and produced a new short proof concept film called Dishwasher. And we're really excited to talk to him about everything he's got going on and what inspired him to be a director and more. So welcome to the show, Jordan. How are you doing today?
Thanks so much, Jason. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing fantastic. So I guess let's start off by getting to know you a little bit more. Tell us how you got into being a director and what made it so special for you to want to pursue it as a career.
Well, I went to film school at Chapman University in Orange County, and I was originally a screenwriting major while I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I switched over to acting, and both of those crafts definitely help each other complementarily. And after working on acting, it just helped my writing. And after school, I would try to act in things that I wrote, but they would never quite come out how I envisioned them. So I decided to take a crack at directing, And I made that short film, Lagoon of Sleep, a few years ago and learned a lot and just kept working. And now I have The Dishwasher coming out.
So what has been the most difficult part for you learning to write movies and direct them?
It's tough. I'm sure you hear that in Hollywood or the film industry or even the music industry, any kind of art trade, there's definitely the business side to it. And you have to sort of assess all your options and be very analytical and sort of put yourself out there. But as an artist, you're putting yourself out there in another way. You have to be incredibly vulnerable. It's the whole adage to have a thick skin but an open heart. And balancing those, not only as someone pursuing the film industry, but balancing them as a human being, you know, being kind to people, but also making sure that you feel valued. You know, even if you walk into a restaurant or something and you want to be polite, but you feel like you're not being taken care of, that as silly as it sounds, that whole dichotomy comes into pursuing anything in the arts, I think. Mm-hmm. So just finding that balance and you know, having a job, a survival job where you can make money and balance your time with creating your art and being truthful in your art, but also managing the business side of all your endeavors. All of that, at least for me, it took me a little while to start to feel some sort of healthy balance with it.
Mm-hmm. As an artist, you know, one of the biggest things is expression and being able to tell our story or our side of the perspective of the situation or whatever it may be. But I know with film also, you got to make it entertaining. You got to make it something that somebody's going to want to come and see. You're going to want to make it so that way it touches not only what you're trying to accomplish out there, but also, like I said, on entertainment value. So when you're writing, how do you try to find that balance? What's going to make this thing special? What's going to make people come to it? What are the things that you have to kind of make sure that is included to make sure that happens?
That's a great question because, like you said, you want to make it marketable or touch people, you know, as many audiences as possible. I think the danger is when you only think about it from the outside, saying, I think this is going to be entertaining or, you know, people are going to connect to this from an analytical standpoint. I think going inside yourself and finding what you think makes you cry or laugh or angry or whatever it is, because we're all human beings. If you depict an emotion very truthfully and honestly, other people will connect to it no matter what. And I think that takes a lot of young artists a long time to realize, because as an artist, you want to please everyone, and you're in a very vulnerable position when you do that or when you attempt to do that. So you start thinking about what everyone thinks of you rather than going deeper inside yourself to bring that out. So in the writing process, you know, I don't know what it's like to be victimized by the cartel as it happens in my film, but I know what it's like to be made feel less than someone else or to be, you know, minorly threatened by someone. So the farther I go inside and really pick apart that experience, I think that's been valuable for me as far as how people are receiving the film.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. It makes a lot of sense, actually. You know, I have this one idea that I've had for 2-3 years in my head. And, you know, the thing about it is first of all, I don't know how to write a script. But the second part is budget. You know, I can make this thing so crazy expensive, you know, because I guess you gotta try to put into perspective how you're going to be able to shoot this thing for the budget that you have. Because otherwise, I mean, you can make it so you have all these crazy effects and, you know, it would take millions and millions of dollars to put together. How do you wrap that up and kind of keep yourself in check so it doesn't get too expensive when you write it?
That's definitely a challenge of a struggling filmmaker or any kind of artist. Definitely for this film, because as you mentioned, it's a proof of concept short film, which means it's a little sample for a feature length movie. So all of those things you talked about as far as marketing it to a wider audience or at least to financiers or producers all comes into the equation. But all of that was in my mind as I was writing it. So again, it's the balancing act of how do I make this very personal to me, but how do I keep the budget very low? I think for me, it's just come with a bit of experience producing small projects, having gone through the process of going through your line budget and saying, okay, the last time I rented insurance, it cost this much money. The last time I rented this camera package, it cost this much money. Maybe I overpaid for it that time. Maybe I don't need to purchase this. It's just like anything. The more you do it, the more you're able to sort of fine-tune line items and expenses that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that. That makes a lot of sense. So tell me.
And also, too, just being creative as well, because we were so limited with money, instead of doing two setups with the camera, maybe we could combine them, and it'll save us time and money and an extra piece of equipment, too. So that's
true.
That's always a solution as well.
Sure. So tell me a little bit about this new movie that you have coming out, The Dishwasher. What is it all about?
So The Dishwasher is a Spanish-language film it's inspired by true events. It was a story that was told to me about a young family that's eating in a restaurant in Rocky Point, Mexico, and they receive a message from the local cartel. And I don't want to spoil what the message says, but basically it pushes this family into a fight-or-flight situation where they have to make a life-or-death decision. And the film is only about 15 minutes long, so it happens in real time, meaning we're with the family the whole time while they're at this dinner. And from there, it culminates in a plot for vengeance. And again, that's our little cliffhanger or teaser that this story will continue after the film.
Mm. So basically, the proof concept film is, I'm assuming that would be like the pilot show for like a television series or something like that. It kind of gets you involved
that's
in
exactly
it and
right.
See how people would react to it.
Exactly.
So let's just say that this thing gets picked up and it becomes like a full-length feature movie. What are some of the other things that are going to go into it? I mean, do you have that prepared for the whole story if it does get picked up? Is it written?
It is. It's written. It's done. So that was also something else to keep in mind. We always knew it was going to be a larger project. And it's difficult because having a proof of concept in a short film, those could be two very different things, meaning a short film is resolute, has a beginning, middle, and end, and it stands alone as one story. Because we're trying to have our cake and eat it too here, we have a short film with a beginning, middle, and end, but some may not find the ending as resolute, but that's the point because we want to continue this feature. And as far as the elements in the feature, while the proof of concept takes place in Rocky Point, Mexico, by the very last scene of this short film, we're in Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
And the feature film will then continue in English. Again, something we thought about to create a wider audience, but it will definitely still have an entirely Latino cast, which is something we're excited about. And in doing further research, it deals with a lot of elements from the cartel, but not drugs. We were able to research and find actually a different trade that this particular cartel is able to finance themselves with, something very unique to the story. And the characters find love, and there's vengeance and pursuing all different kinds of obstacles. So we're excited to see how this film does now that it's premiering at the San Diego Film Festival, to continue on the story and to tell people more.
So this next question's got a bunch of different things in it, and I'm sorry if I get a little crazy with it, but I guess it's just kind of how it's hitting my brain. So you could have done a like a trailer for the movie, or you could have done like you said the proof concept. How did you choose what goes into the proof concept? Because obviously you have the entire movie written, so you got to pick out some of the best parts. What made this part the one that you chose to do, and why didn't you just do a trailer for it as opposed to doing this full proof concept? I mean, I think I know the answer, but I think somebody else might want to ask the same question, so that's why I'm asking.
Sure, no, it's a great question. Embarking on any kind of filmmaking journey, I think for myself, I look up to people who may have done it before for any kind of semblance in my pursuit. And the director of Whiplash, La La Land, and now First Man, the Neil Armstrong biopic with Ryan Gosling, his name is Damien Chazelle. And his film Whiplash came out a few years ago starring Miles Teller and J.K. Simmons, and it was a thriller about a jazz drummer. And to a lot of people, that didn't sound very appealing when he just had the feature script. And so what he did was he made a proof of concept to sell people on the idea, to actually show people, this is the film, this is how I'm going to do it. And it did really well for him. So looking at that is very inspirational to me as a filmmaker or a struggling artist. So we sort of followed that model where we were able to look at the whole story, like you said, and find the most palpable piece of it. And to me, it was always the fact that it was inspired by true events. And this story in particular that you see in the short film, the event that happens in the restaurant, the message from the cartel and the young family being pushed into the fight or flight situation is the most, it's sort of the catalyst for everything else that happens in the feature film. So I knew when the story was first told to me how much it shook me and how much it moved me. So I figured if I could do that and put it on film and do that for audiences, it would then become very moving or palpable to them as well. And to answer your second question, why not just do a trailer or a teaser?
Mm-hmm.
I would say either ambition or stupidity. And I haven't figured it out yet. I guess, you know, maybe ask me in a couple years. But it's tricky doing it in that sort of format. I think that's another skill set that maybe another filmmaker would have, being able to hook a viewer in with just a trailer, just 2 minutes or even 1 minute. I just felt like my skill set coming from an acting background or a screenwriting background was really raw emotional performances with my actors in the moment as they're pushed into this really uncomfortable situation.
Mm-hmm. You know, what's fascinating about stuff like this is that it has truth to it, and it's based on a true story. So how did you find out about the story?
So it was at a time where I was feeling really creatively stagnant, meaning I was a struggling actor in Los Angeles, working a restaurant job at night, and I wasn't getting anything. I was auditioning a lot, and I didn't know what to do next. So just by happenstance, my girlfriend's mother was in town from Arizona. She was in L.A., and we went out to dinner. And my girlfriend's parents are from Mexico and Guatemala, mm-hmm. so they have tons of rich culture, vibrancy in general, but they have a ton of amazing stories. And we just got on the topic of cartels while we were at dinner, just my girlfriend and her mother, and she told me this really tragic story about this really uncomfortable situation that this family was forced into by the local cartel. And I don't know if it was because I was in a restaurant when the story was told to me or if it was the story itself, but it just shook me. And I knew immediately my brain as a writer director started writing it in my head right there at the table. But we went home after dinner and I wrote it, you know, the first draft of the short, and my hands were shaking after because I thought it would be powerful.
Wow. So what do you hope when this thing comes out that people will get from this particular movie, other than maybe just entertainment value? Is there a moral lesson or anything else from it, or is it just fun to watch and keep you on your seat?
I think, you know, again, it goes back to the question of how do you market this to a wide audience? The films I like to see are fun to watch, engaging, thrilling, and then there's another part of me that likes to rewatch a film and draw deeper meanings and be moved by them in new ways. So as a filmmaker, I could hope that I would do that for an audience. Someone asked me this question recently. They said, what do you want the audience to feel? And I said, heartbreak, not just to make an audience sad, because I don't think heartbreak is just sadness. I think it's a kinesthetic state, meaning it's an active state, and you can choose what to do with that heartbreak after. You could choose to stay in the sadness, or you could choose to move on to something else. And by having a feature film after, choosing to move on to something else would be, well, okay, let's see the rest of this story so I could do something with my heartbreak. I'm in. Let's go. So that's ideally the reaction I could hope for.
Now, this is coming out pretty soon, I'm sure. You said it's going to be in a film festival. Where are other places that people will be able to see this little short of the movie?
So right now it's tricky with film festivals because a lot of film festivals want to be the first one to show your film,
mm-hmm.
because if it does go on to do well, you know, that looks great for the film festival. So we're not able to post it online right now. We do have a little teaser clip that's about a minute long that is available online. If anyone goes on YouTube or Facebook and searches the Dishwasher short film, it should pop up. So this weekend we're actually screening at the San Diego Film Festival. We'll also be screening at the Bend Film Festival in Oregon. After that, we'll have to decide when we're able to officially release it online, depending on if we get into more festivals or if we happen to make a deal in an ideal situation with the company. We'll have to see when we're able to post the film. So for now, people could follow us on Facebook or on Instagram, The Dishwasher Movie 2018 on Facebook. Instagram is imthedishwasher.com. So we'll definitely be posting updates. And people are, the following that we have, people are very into it and very active, which always makes, it would make any artist feel good to be supported in that way.
Sure. So what happens after this, after the film festival? What if it goes really good? Are you going to put the whole thing together? Is that going to be the next step and goal for you guys?
That's the idea. That's the idea. That's a dream world. That's a dream scenario. But I really believe you can make your dreams a reality through work and failures and ambition, all of those things. But yeah, that's the idea. If we could make the feature length film, and it won't be a big blockbuster studio film. I think the spirit of the movie will remain on a small scale, which is what we prefer. So if I can hire the same crew I had work on the short film, again, that's a dream. If I could hire some of the same actors, that's wonderful. So that's the goal. If nothing happens, we're looking forward to a great weekend and seeing what the film will do in the future, whether we put it online or if we screen it somewhere else.
Sure. And when is this? When is the San Diego Film Festival?
So the San Diego Film Festival happens this Wednesday. Our screening is Friday night at 7 o'clock and Saturday at 3 p.m.
All right. Well, Jordan, this has been so much fun. You're a great guy. I love your enthusiasm. I love that you're going after your dreams and not letting anything keep you down. And I hope that your story will not only inspire others to do the same, but I also hope that you do very well at this film festival, and maybe we can bring you on when the whole movie comes out.
I would love that. Thank you so much, Jason. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Not a problem. Thank you so much for coming on.
Take care.
You too. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back after this, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Jason Dowd of Imagination Art Studios is proud to announce the release of his steampunk collection, which is currently on tour across the country. There you will see beautiful handmade masks from Venice, Italy that accentuate beautiful women to create amazing stories and feelings to those who visit the collection. Each photo series has a theme, mask, authentic props, and beautifully elaborate outfits, all collaborated in the mind of Jason Dowd to create the right emotion and feeling. The masks come from a shop at Epcot at the Italian Pavilion, where all these photos are on display for you to see. This is one of the biggest accomplishments of his career, having his work at Disney. Come see the beautiful first release of the series, which includes Distressed Dancer, Spanish Serenade, The Pied Piper, and Reaching for the Czars. You can see them in person or online at www.imaginationartstudios.com. For more information, visit the website. Again, it's imaginationartstudios.com. Our Facebook is Imagination Art Studios. Twitter is @DowStudios. And Instagram is @JasonDow. Come and be mesmerized by the masks and the stories behind them.
Hey y'all, you're listening to Tequila Cowgirl off my new album, Tequila Cowgirl. My name's Cherish Lee. I'm looking forward to having you hear the new album. We're going to go ahead and release it January 2018. There are 7 tracks on it, and it's a window looking into Cherish Lee. So I hope y'all enjoy it. thank you for being a part of this with me. I couldn't do it without you. Tequila Cowgirl. Hey guys, it's Lulimae Silverstein from Lydia on Funk, and you're listening to the AME Radio Show. Won't you pick the pieces up, cause it feels just like I'm walking on broken glass.
Welcome back, everybody. We are at the end of the show already. I got a couple of things we're going to be talking about. But I got to tell you, one thing that is completely tripping me out is that it is November already. Where is this year gone? You know, I feel like I just woke up and it was January 1st and I blinked and it's gone. It's crazy. But that means that we had Halloween. So I hope that your kids had a great time. And you know what? Maybe you did too. Maybe you went out and went to a Halloween party, or maybe you even went trick-or-treating yourself. Who knows? But I hope that they had a great time. I hope you had a lot of great candy to eat. And I hope you got a lot of those big, big candy bars. You know, one of the things that I used to love when I was going trick-or-treating is seeing one of those big, huge Reese's peanut butter cups get dropped in. You know, the ones that two or three of them at the time? And even the single ones were good too. I didn't really care. I just liked the Reese's peanut butter cups. And the other candy that I really enjoyed growing up, especially trick-or-treating, was the Kit Kats. I loved the small Kit Kats. I even kind of liked the smaller, like, Snickers and stuff like that. But, you know, the candy I didn't like the most was, the taffies. Taffy's okay. I like taffy. It's not completely terrible. But it's not the kind of candy I really liked. I always wanted those big, you know, chocolate bars full of peanut butter and stuff like that. But you know what? One of the things I do miss when I was trick-or-treating up north is that they used to give out these either candied apples or these popcorn balls. Now, you can't make those anymore. You're not allowed to do that anymore because obviously it's not in a wrapper and people do some pretty terrible things. But those were the best. Oh, man, did I love those popcorn balls. And you know what? I think I'm going to make some myself. I haven't done it in so long. In fact, I've never done it. But I think I want to make my own popcorn balls. Give me a blast from the past. I like that. And also, you guys have probably seen the Red Sox. Boston Red Sox won the World Series in 4-1. They pretty much swept the Dodgers. And congratulations to both teams for making it to the World Series, but also a special congratulations to the Boston Red Sox, the 2018 World Series champions. You know, I grew up watching them. I grew up watching the Yankees. Both of them were in pretty much where I lived, and I have special experiences with both. And I'm really excited to see the Red Sox winning another World Championship. They've won 5 in just a couple of years. That's awesome. That's really awesome. Okay, so I guess that's pretty much all I have for you guys today. Again, we will not be here with a special show, another show tomorrow. This is for Friday and Saturday, but we will be back again with 2 guests per show, two different shows per weekend next week. So please tune in for that, and I hope that this week has done you well. I hope that you're excited about what's coming up in the weeks to come, and I hope that you're getting ready for Thanksgiving. Because that's the next thing that's coming out, and I'm really excited about that. It's one of my favorite holidays. I love eating the turkey. I love getting together. I love all the special food, the specials. And you know what? Speaking of specials, I miss Charlie Brown's Halloween. I can't believe I missed that. I'm going to have to go find it because I just cannot have... I just cannot go through this week without experiencing that. But we will have a bunch of new specials coming out, I'm sure, in the next couple weeks. So just keep those... television listings posted and make some memories with your kids. All right, guys, we will see you again next week. We have 2 more guests coming up. You'll be able to find us on amfm247.com every Friday at 6 a.m. and every Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and on their 11 a.m. FM stations as well. You can find us on wklap.com every Friday at 12 noon. every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You'll also be able to find us on Radio Love, that's radioluv.com, every Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can find us on iHeart, iTunes, Spotify, and phoenixbroadcasting.com on demand. And we're constantly trying to find new ways to get the word out there, so keep checking our website to see if we have added any more in the near future. All right, guys, again, see you next week. Have a great week. Keep those creative juices flowing, and good night, everybody.
That's the end?
We're done. Calm down, people. Calm down. Okay? That's it.